hot here in the Love Shack. You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today, we will hear from Hudson resident Rob Gellis, who is reporting his monthly Rob Around the County segment about local history. And today he talks with Peter Frank and Pat Malloy, the co-founders of Friends of Hudson Youth. We will also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Melanie Lakosovic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media that Ravenna Mayor Bill Misuraca is thinking about getting a second opinion on what the gritty substance was that coated parts of the village in late November. Samples were taken from Magnolia Circle after the most recent dusting, and the State Department of Environmental Conservation Laboratory identified the substance as salt. It could not say where the dust came from. Samples tested were collected only at Magnolia Circle, and the dusting event was far more widespread, the mayor said. Quote, this was a village-wide event as far up as Northern Route 9W all the way down to Magnolia Circle and every neighborhood in between, unquote, Ms. Raka said. Quote, could some of it had been salt? Absolutely, clearly from the analysis. That's what it says. In other instances, I'm not so sure. So the next time this happens, I will probably recommend that the village bring in another, and I'm not saying anything is wrong with the DEC's analysis, but I would love a second opinion because this is an important issue. Quote. The health implications are concerning, Ms. Soraka said. Quote, why are we breathing in salt or whatever the other substance may be? Unquote. Both village and town officials are urging residents to contact local officials or the DEC at 518-357-2345 if a similar event happens again. quote, "Don't call me a week after it happens. Don't stop me at true value," unquote, Ms. Araka said. Quote, "When it happens, call me," unquote. Timely reporting of dusting incidents is critical to identifying the source, he said. Town Supervisor George McHugh echoed the mayor's advice on November 22nd and urged quick action in reporting future dusting incidents so the source of the substance can be identified. Read more about this story in the Ravenna News Herald.
Andrea Mako at Porcupine Soup that the town of Cairo board voted December 15th not to allow cannabis sales or lounges. The vote was 3-2, with outgoing Supervisor John Coyne and Councilpersons Tim Powers and Mary Jo Cords voting against cannabis sales, and Councilpersons Stephen Karlovich and Supervisor-elect Jason Watts voting to allow sales. A standing-room-only crowd wanted a different decision. Resident Barbara Spoller said, and I quote, "You are our elected officials. You were elected by the people. The people sitting in this room now are clearly telling you they don't want to opt out. As our elected officials, you need to strongly consider what the people in this room who elected you are saying," end quote. Many residents were mad about the tax dollars Cairo was turning away. Sherry B. True, county legislator-elect, said, and I quote, "Great Barrington, within 3 years, I believe, they brought in about $6 million. The town ended up with like $1 million, end quote. New York legalized cannabis in April, and towns and villages have until December 31st to opt out of retail sales and or consumption lounges. Retail sales are not expected to begin until 2023 as regulations are put in place. Coyne said he voted against because all those regulations are not yet set up, while Watts claimed she was listening to the crowd. Watts said, and I quote, 95% said they were for it or they didn't have an opinion. I'm just afraid if we opt out, businesses are going to skip right over us," end quote. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup.
Hate Watch Report is reporting that a white supremacist recruiting sticker was found at the Hudson Boat Launch on December 18th. The sticker was affixed to a bench in the boat launch parking area. White supremacists on Telegram organized a series of rallies under the banner of White Lives Matter in major American cities over the weekend. Telegram addresses on the notice found Saturday in Hudson lead to an online call to action. Quote, "Tomorrow, 18th of December, we must again go out and spread the message that we are fighting for white children's future and that we welcome all good, willing people to join us. Time is running out and we are aware of it for our children. White Lives Matter, New York, is prepping for today's event with eagerness and vigor. We are looking forward to garnering the attention of and raising awareness for our brothers and sisters within the Empire State," unquote. According to Hate Watch, the framework for local white supremacists to organize rallies was launched on the social media platform Telegram in late March. Specific rallies are organized by locals who create new Telegram channels using the initials of their states or cities. In some cases, the channels for local rallies could be a way to gauge local interest. The Anti-Defamation League defines White Lives Matter as a white supremacist phrase that originated in early 2015 as a racist response to the Black Lives Matter movement. Since 2015, white supremacists in several states, especially members of the Texas-based white supremacist group Aryan Renaissance Society, have promoted the slogan. Read more about this story at hatewatchreport.com.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics. The New York Attorney General's office doubts whether the state can take back money former Governor Andrew Cuomo made while writing a book in office. Attorney General Counsel Larry Schimmel wrote to the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, and I quote, "There does not appear to be the statutory authority to order payment directly to the Attorney General or for the Attorney General to determine the receipts of such payments," end quote. Jacob wants to recoup about $5 million because a state assembly report found Cuomo used substantial state resources to write the book. Schimmel also wrote that the Ethics Commission requires a substantial basis investigation report before referring recovery matters to the Attorney General and that agencies must show they have exhausted, and I quote, its own collection activity, end quote, before turning it over to the Attorney General's Civil Recovery Unit. Cuomo's lawyers are elated. Cuomo's attorney Jim McGuire said, and I quote, Jacob's action violated fundamental constitutional rights and flagrantly exceeded its statutory authority. It's not at all surprising that the lawlessness of Jacob's latest unlawful action is being recognized as just that. We remain ready to vindicate the governor before a politically neutral body, our courts, end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that two major labor unions have endorsed Governor Kathy Hochul's 2022 campaign for a full term. She has received the nod from the United Steelworkers and the Hotel Trades Council way in advance of the June Democratic primary. Combined, both labor groups have thousands of members statewide and have been politically active organizations. Quote, "I am incredibly grateful to receive this endorsement from the men and women of the United Steelworkers," unquote, Hochul said in a statement on December 17th. Quote, "I will always stand in solidarity with the labor movement and fight to make sure working families receive the wages, benefits, and workplace protections they deserve," unquote. Other candidates for the Democratic nomination next year include Representative Tom Suozzi and New York City public advocate Jumani Williams. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is also considering a run for governor. Read more about the story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Coley Callahan reports in the Times Union that four Dutchess County men were arrested for first-degree robbery as a hate crime for targeting the race of their victim. The four men from Dover, Joshua A. Benson, age 40, and Joshua A. Benson, Jr., age 23. The other two men arrested are Nicholas L. Gast, age 34, and Darius L. Robinson, age 19, were arrested for the December 6th incident. The robbers allegedly took jewelry and one with a handgun fired a single shot. No one was seriously injured. If convicted, the four face a maximum sentence of 25 years in prison. Darius Robinson and Joshua Benson Jr. were jailed with a $50,000 cash bail, $100,000 secure bond, or $200,000 partially secure bond, while Nicholas Gask and Joshua Benson were jailed without bail. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday should be mostly sunny with a high of just 32 degrees. Partly cloudy Monday night with a low around 27 is the forecast, and then Tuesday should also be mostly sunny with a high of 36 and a low around 25. And Wednesday is also mostly sunny with a high of 39, a low around 23. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Monday, December 20th on 90.7 FM, including we get on the Afrosonic Taxi at 10 a.m. with tracks from Sue George, Marsha Castro, and Tavasha Muana, among others. Then Brendan Donegan is live in Hudson playing favorites at 11 a.m. And at noon, after the local news, it's time for the Deep Three Show, today featuring works from John Zorn, Amanda Fury, Yada Kobayashi, and others. 2 p.m., the Vital Weekly Show tracks new music from around the world, and we hear new songs today from Brigitte Allure, Paulina Awazarek, and Carla Duratz, among others. Then Rebecca Wilcox and Hannah Alou, and Roy Claire Potter and Kieran Piercy are featured on the Radiophrenia Redux Show at 3 p.m. on the radio. At 8 p.m., J.D. Eisman from Roundtop is giving you The Spell on 90.7 FM, and at 10 p.m. it's time for The Mosquito with Nancy Giles and Carmen Borgia beaming in from Worthy Soundworks in Catskill and other locations on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page.
and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Tune in hourly reports from NORAD on Santa's progress around the world on Christmas Eve, Friday, December 24th, on the radio at WGXC 90.7. At the top of every hour, we'll hear a report from NORAD as Santa circles the globe handing out presents on Christmas Eve. That's on the hour at WGXC 90.7, Friday, December 24th. Tune in hourly reports from NORAD on Santa's progress around the world on Christmas Eve, Friday, December 24th, on the radio at WGXC 90.7. At the top of every hour, we'll hear a report from NORAD as Santa circles the globe handing out presents on Christmas Eve. That's on the hour at WGXC 90.7, Friday, December 24th.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, December 20th. We are 97% of the way through the year. Can you guess how many days left until winter? That's right, it starts tomorrow. And the temperatures seem to know that already. Early this morning, we see 15 degrees in Red Falls and 20 in Cheviot. That's going to rise a bit. We're going to reach 35 degrees by 3 p.m. Winds will be in the upper single digits, pushing conditions into the very cold zone. So, be sure to layer up and have a decent coat if going out today. Cloud cover will be low, so don't forget the sunglasses either. Overnight, temperatures fall to 27 degrees. Then tomorrow, a high of 42 with low winds and increasing sunshine make it a relatively nice day to get out. 28 degrees overnight takes us into a Wednesday with a high of 44 and possible wind gusts in the afternoon. Thursday will be cold, 35 degrees. Friday, some precipitation finally shows back up on the radar. Speaking of, the closest possible snowfall today will be in the Adirondacks. The hottest temperature expected this week is 44 degrees, and the coldest temperature expected is 14. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 3:38 a.m., low tide at 9:48 a.m., high tide again at 3:35 p.m., then low tide again at 10:38 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 39 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:12 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:16 a.m. Tomorrow is going to be the shortest day of the year, coming in at 9 hours and 15 minutes of light. We had our earliest sunset back on December 7th. And coming up on January 3rd, we will have our latest sunrise. Speaking of the sun, looking way up, we see shortwave blackouts are possible today and tomorrow with active flare regions facing us. Solar wind speed is currently 516 kilometers per second at 9.5 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor across the board for daytime and fair below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 5, storm level. The current sunspot number is 109. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jim McCabe of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
At last, a do-it-yourself fallout shelter from
Survive All.
A shelter that will adequately protect you and your family from the devastating effects of
nuclear fallout and falling debris.
A survive-all shelter is engineered and designed for simple assembly, takes just a weekend's time, and is civil defense approved.
Survive-all basement-type shelters are FHA approved. No money down, up to 5 years to pay.
Learn how easy it is to assemble a survive-all, do-it-yourself fallout shelter today.
The time is now. Protect your family against atomic attack and deadly nuclear fallout. See a survive-all shelter today.
I came along when he broke your heart. That's when you needed someone to help forget about him. I gave you love with a brand new start. That's what you needed the most to set your broken heart free. I know you cried and you felt blue, but when I could, I gave strength to you. I'm waiting for the day when you can love again.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
There is no reason in the 21st century for why people are still exposed to this substance that was poisoning people back in the 18th century.
Vice President Kamala Harris stopped by the Washington, D.C. headquarters of the AFL-CIO on Wednesday to unveil a new lead pipe and paint action plan. As part of that plan, the EPA is allocating $3 billion for lead pipe replacement efforts in 2022. Long term, the initiative calls for replacing all of the nation's lead lines in the next decade. Harris calls it a job creator.
When union jobs are safer, our communities are safer. And when union members go to work, they go to work for all of us.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is pushing back on Democrats' plans to pass new voting rights legislation by year's end. The Hill reports the Dems are looking at altering the Senate's filibuster rules to break a months-long stalemate on the issue.
My colleagues across the aisle have pushed absurd bills that would do things like neuter voter ID laws, make every state legalize ballot harvesting, turn the Federal Election Commission into a biased, partisan body, and even send taxpayer money to political campaigns.
Minnesota Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar argues that Republican-controlled states have restricted voting access since the 2020 presidential election. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, as of early October, 19 states this year had adopted laws making it harder for folks to cast their ballots.
The Constitution anticipated that perhaps we would need a federal response when, in the words of the Constitution, as written by our founding fathers, that Congress can make or alter the rules regarding federal elections.
It's not all partisan gridlock, though. The Senate has unanimously passed a bill effectively banning imports from China's Xinjiang region, where the government is accused of forcing members of China's Muslim minority into labor camps. The act would only allow imports from the region if customs officials can prove the goods were made without the use of slave labor. And a bipartisan coalition of lawmakers has finalized a proposal to update the 1994 Violence Against Women Act. California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein says the new version would extend numerous services to survivors of domestic violence.
Our agreement would also invest in prevention education efforts. It would expand access to emergency housing support for domestic violence supporters, and it would improve the health care response to sexual violence across the country.
Finally today, President Joe Biden signed a measure posthumously awarding the Congressional Gold Medal to the 13 U.S. service members who lost their lives during the Afghanistan evacuation in August. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really, really wonderful things.
It'd be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs.
All the way down.
I turned it down.
Only dogs can hear.
I turned it down.
Did you hear that?
No.
You're listening to the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. And Weather Underground says it's 21 degrees right now if Fahrenheit is your flavor in Chatham. -19 degrees in Queemans. 23 in Hudson. 20 in Cairo. It's also 20 in Cairo. You get the idea. It's cold out there. And you can hear there's some traffic on Route 23, and it's sort of partly cloudy here. A little gray over the mountain. It's supposed to clear up as the day goes on and be mostly sunny and cold for the next couple days. We're going to speak with Rob Gellis, and we're going to hear his interview with Peter Frank and Pat Malloy, the co-founders of the Friends of Hudson Youth, in a few minutes. Just stay tuned.
Hearts to sleep through the fleeting hours.
There is jazz guitarist Jeff Parker there joining the New Breed and singer Ruby Parker on Soul Love on the radio at WGXC. Brand new music for you. Now on the phone is Rob Gellis, who is going to tell us about his monthly Rob Around the County segment. Rob, are you there?
Yes, I am, Tom.
How is everything going in Columbia County today?
Things are fine. It's sunny and cold.
Sunny and cold, yes. It is super cold. It hasn't really gotten this cold yet.
No. Is this the coldest day, maybe?
I think so. I don't really remember it being below 32 during the day.
No, I think it's been above every day.
But I guess it's winter tomorrow, so it should be cold.
Yeah. Well, no snow.
No, it hasn't. I guess the Berkshires got a couple inches a couple weeks ago, but we've really only got a little dusting over here. I don't know if you guys have gotten any snow.
No, we didn't get anything. It was kind of a cold rain.
Ah, so tell us, who did you talk to this month?
I talked to a gentleman. His name is Peter Frank and Pat Malloy. They both were they're founders of the Friends of Hudson Youth. It's a nonprofit organization that helps fund the Hudson Youth Center. That's on South 3rd Street. And it also Oakdale Lake. They help fund Oakdale Lake, you know, maintaining it, and also the program they have in the summer, the youth programs, camps. So we talked about, it was organized in a few years ago, so it changed the way things were with the youth center. As a non-for-profit, they can raise quite a bit of money to help out. And they also talked about a little bit about the history of the Hudson Youth Center going back in time. So that's the gist of the interview.
Yeah, it seems like people should help young people around here. There's not like a lot for young people to do around here.
That's still true, yes, yeah.
Yeah, today...
I guess people have to be aware... Maybe people aren't aware of it. There are things out there, and maybe people knew about it. Maybe they would you know, like the youth program, maybe they would get involved in it. But maybe a lot of people don't know about it.
Yeah, and there, historically there have been youth programs, and there's good youth programs today, like Greater Promise in Hudson, and the city's youth program, and all kinds of things.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so do we need to know anything else before we hear the story?
No, we're fine. I think it's fine, yeah. I'll let you go with it.
All right, well, here is Rob Gellis and talking with Peter Frank and Pat Malloy.
Thank you so much. Bye.
This is Rob Gellis. I'm interviewing Peter Frank and Pat Malloy, who are on the board of Friends of Hudson Youth. I want to thank both of you for coming on today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes, thank you, Rob.
So, Pat, maybe you could talk a little bit about the history behind this organization.
Well, you know, Peter can speak to the founding of the Hudson Youth, Friends of Hudson Youth, and I can give you a historical perspective on the Hudson Boys and Girls Club. So I don't know if you want to
Maybe you could do that. So, Peter, could you maybe tell us more about the Friends of the Hudson Youth?
Sure. So, you know, we're a relatively young organization. We started a little less than 4 years ago in the spring of 2018. I met with Nick Zakos, who was the director then, and said that I'd been thinking about the youth department for a long time and, you know, was wondering how I could best support it. And he connected me with Pat and Joan Kowick and some other people who he was already talking to about forming some kind of a advisory group or support group for the center. Because it's a city agency, the youth department can't fundraise. And so it became, you know, quickly clear that something that could be really useful was to form a nonprofit that could serve as a kind of a fiscal bucket, as a kind of conduit for donations, come into the youth center and help support it and give it, you know, provide the funds for more enriched activities, you know, to fund things like the sports leagues, which were foundering at that time, the computer lab. There was only a few computers working at the time, and they really needed funding beyond what was in the city budget to do that. So we set out to form a nonprofit, kind of like a booster club, to enhance their programs. And it's been very successful. Right now we support a whole range of activities, including the waterfront program in the summer, which trains lifeguards, allowed the city to expand the number of lifeguard hours. We've got a bike co-op in the summer, which is a tremendous program where kids learn bike maintenance skills, and they put in enough hours, they actually are able to earn their own bicycle. And of course, it's, you know, a joy for a kid to own their own bike, and many come from families which couldn't otherwise, you know, afford to buy them one. And so that's been a tremendous program. We fund music production, dance, visual arts programs, and then two recreational sports leagues, the winter basketball program and the fall soccer program.
Oh, that's very interesting. Do you see anything coming up in the upcoming 2022 that might be added to different programs or expanded?
Well, you know, we're always looking to expand and do more. One exciting thing for 2022 is that there's going to be a new position at the youth department, a nutrition coordinator. Providing hot meals every day has always been a really important part of what the youth department provides. But there's never been, you know, a full-time person to run that program. And, you know, it's a lot more than just making, you know, than just like putting food out every day. It's also about, you know, teaching kids about nutrition, teaching cooking, participating in washing the dishes. You know, it's a whole host of activities. And also a lot of families in Hudson are food insecure. They don't have enough food at home to feed the families. And so part of that position is also going to be connecting families with appropriate social services or other sources of food to supplement the food that the kids get at the youth center. But so we're really hoping that we're going to have a much more robust kind of like cooking and food nutrition classes. And that's something that Friends of Hudson Youth would really like to support in any way that we can.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about, I'm speaking to Pat Malloy, a little bit about the history of Hudson Youth, and of course it had different names before.
Okay, I'm a little hazy on some of the time frame here, but my first experience was when it was called just the Hudson Boys Club, and that was back in 1966. I had just moved back to Hudson after my father was transferred to Connecticut and got transferred back, and I was a member. And at that time, the club was primarily divided into four age groups called midgets, juniors, intermediates, and seniors. And everybody was allocated a time where they could use the game room or the gymnasium. And basically, that's what it consisted of at that time. Downstairs was the game area, pool tables, ping pong tables, air hockey, checkers, chess, things of that nature. And upstairs, there was a gymnasium. You know, basketball, flag football, dodgeball, you know, whatever they deemed at that point in time. And at that point in time, it was run by three men. Raymond Paul was the executive director at the time. Morton Moe Crank was the gym activities director, and Adam Nardowitz was the game room supervisor. You had your own times, and they tried to separate it where the midgets, which were the little kids, weren't interacting with the seniors that were the, you know, the big kids. So it worked out well. It was basically at that point in time just a drop-in center where kids would show up after school or after dinner, hang out with their friends for a while, play a few games, and then head home. My next association was in 1976. I had just graduated from college, and Gerald Wood was the executive director. Gerald was also, at that time, the assistant recreation supervisor for the city of Hudson. It was still known as just the Boys Club at that time, but they did expand to have ladies come in on a Thursday night. Programmatically, it didn't really change that much. Still basically, you know, the same programs, the drop-in. One of the things I might add, there was also at one point in time, there was a wood shop. And that room has been recreated a couple times. There was then a weightlifting room, and now it's pretty much a all-purpose quiet area. You know, so that particular part of the youth center has done a lot of change. Then you get into the 80s and 90s, and the Boys Club was always associated with Boys Clubs of America. That involved paying a charter fee every year. There was a board of directors that oversee the day-to-day operation of the Boys and Girls Club, and I believe it's probably in the early 80s that's when it became the Boys and Girls Club, or maybe the late 1983, okay. And at that point in time, it was becoming more difficult to raise funds, and was a skeleton staff, and, you know, a couple directors had went through, so it wasn't, you know, the best of times at the Boys and Girls Club. It got to the point where there was no funds basically coming at all. They had a summer camp, which was just fantastic. It was called Camp Anderson. It was out in the Kinderhook area. They sold that in order to fund the day-to-day operation of the Boys Club. Once those funds dried up, there was really nothing coming in, and the city made a decision to absorb the Boys and Girls Club into their operation and basically changed the name to the Hudson Youth Center. Since that point in time, there's been several new, that programs were held jointly between the Youth Center and the Boys Club, the Department of Youth and the Boys Club, and using Department of Youth staff to run programs at the youth center. So a lot of guys and girls wearing a lot of different hats trying to make that go. Dick Tracy was a longtime director of the Hudson Department of Youth, and since that time there's been three or four, you know, different directors, and everybody's tried to make a stab at making it productive, but since the Friends of Hudson Youth have taken over, they have an advisory board as well as a fundraising arm. And the program you see today is totally different than what I saw when I first came in 1966, where there's still recreation opportunities, but there's a host of other programs that open to both boys and girls that
just about anything that you have an interest in. If the Youth Center and the Friends of Austin Youth will make an effort to fund that for you. So it's evolved into a complete youth center.
Pat, I wanted to know, maybe there's a, do you, I know Peter talked about what he sees in 2022. Are there things that you would like to put on the bucket list for added programs or expanding anything?
Well, you know, I'm getting old, Rob, you know, so I rely on the younger folks that are dealing with the kids on a day-to-day basis to, you know, tell me or Peter or who's ever involved as to what, you know, what the interests are, because once again, you know, the interests are a lot different than, you know, from when I was going there, and you got to rely on, you know, the kids that are going there as well as the staff that's there on a day-to-day basis. And most of the program things they've come up, or all the program ideas they've come up with in the last 3 years, yeah, have been very good. So there's something out there that you might not think would be an interest to a lot of people, and all of a sudden you run it and you get a lot of people involved. So we rely on the staff and those attending the youth center to kind of give us the idea of where we want to go.
A lot of the things we funded, the you know, the inspiration for it has come from the younger staff at the youth center, who are, you know, just a couple of years younger than the kids that they're, you know, responsible for. So, you know, we developed something called Sound Lab, which is a music production program where kids, you know, they write their own beats and they produce their own songs. That totally, you know, came from a request from the kids to have something like that. So that's really, you know, the you know, my background, not in this kind of work at all. So, you know, I'm thrilled to be able to support it. But I, like Pat was saying, you know, like the kids are the experts, and we rely on their expertise to figure out what their needs are.
I was thinking, do they have anything like photography?
You know, that's something that we've talked about, and that's certainly an interest. And I think that could be a really, you know, we'd like to have more programs for older kids than we have now. So I think that would be an exciting, you know. You know, Rebecca Borer, who you know,
yeah,
she does News Club with the kids.
Oh.
And they do create. In fact, there's one that I recently posted on Instagram. That so the kids do filmmaking, and they love that. That's you know, I mean, you see kids today, they're all making videos on their phones, and they're digital natives. So these the kinds of programs that take me, you know, days or weeks to master, they just intuitively figure them out. So, you know, this is a really, those kind of programs really capitalize on, you know, the things that kids are already interested in and already doing and already know more about than many of us old cranks.
So Rebecca's on the staff.
She's one of the, so there's full-time staff, you know, the director, the assistant director, you know, and some rec attendants. But then Friends of Hudson Youth also funds outside instructors, you know, people who, there's an East cousin who comes and does the music program. Rebecca does the video club. Stephanie Monceau does circus art, Spindlestiff Circus after school. She's a larger operation that, you know, has multiple funding streams and has programs at five different places in Columbia County. But we also contribute to her program.
That's great. I don't know about cooking. Well, I think you did talk about it, having this new person on staff who's a nutritionist. Maybe they'll have cooking for the young people there to help in making meals.
Yeah, that's definitely the goal. It's one of the things that kids ask for, you know, and the boys and the girls, I'm happy to say, are interested in learning to cook, and they have a really good time.
That's great. So you have facilities. Obviously, you have a kitchen, facilities.
There is a kitchen. It's, you know, it's it could use a little love, but, you know, it feeds a lot of kids. So, yeah, and it's great to have.
You have vans, don't you?
Yes, we do, thanks to Hudson River Bank and Trust. We have two passenger vans. We have an older van that's kind of on its last legs. It's mostly used as a kind of service vehicle for hauling garbage and things like that. But we have two wonderful newer vans, which were donated by the Hudson River Bank and Trust Foundation.
Oh, how are they used?
Well, so before COVID, course, everything was different. So we used to do, you know, more field trips, and we're starting to do field trips again. You know, like during the summer, the kids go to Greenport Conservation Area, Claremont, Alana. You know, they're larger trips, like going to, what's the water park? Zoom Flume. You know, for something like a trip to Zoom Flume, they charter a school bus.
Try the basketball.
Yeah. You know, the vans are used to shuttle the kids all over the place.
Well, it sounds like you're evolving. You're an evolving organization.
It is. It's growing all the time. Right. Well, things are, at the moment, you know, we can't do any visitors at the youth center, you know, including me. But, you know, that'll change. It's got to change at some point. So, you know, as soon as we can, you know, I'd love you to see the programs there. And then, you know, outdoor stuff is available. And you know, in April, we're planning on reopening the bike co-op out at Oakdale. And that's definitely something that, you know, you should drop by and see.
Is the Arctic Plunge anything to do with you?
The
Polar Plunge, yeah.
That is our premier event.
Yeah. So I can go to it this winter. That's when I'll be able to do it.
Saturday, March 5th at noon.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I want to say that again for my listeners. When is the Arctic Plunge?
Saturday, March 5th at noon. It's the Oakdale Plunge. And the website, oakdaleplunge.com, is open up live in January, for teams to start registering and people to start making donations. And, you know, local businesses sponsor that. We have Columbia Memorial Hospital, Metzwood Insurance, D.B. Hammond Construction Company. They've all re-upped this year to be Avalanche sponsors. But many, many businesses and individuals and other organizations support that. And that funds two organizations, actually. It funds the waterfront, the lifeguard training and the lifeguard hours at Oakdale, and also the volunteer fire department dive team, water rescue and dive team. And I don't know if you're aware, but we have one of the best trained and best equipped dive teams in the Hudson Valley. And a lot of that is due to funding that's been raised over the last 5 years in the Oakdale Plunge.
That's excellent.
There's only, north of the Tappan Zee, there's only four fire departments that are Coast Guard certified. And Hudson's is one of them, and it's the only one that's a volunteer department. So, you know, we're extremely proud of that team. And it's exciting to be able to support them as well.
I saw it last year, and I've seen the fire trucks. And,
I hope you'll be there. You know, you can. I have a team, Rob, and you can join our team.
I'd like to. Yeah. If there's,
Ready yet?
Yeah, if there's a sign me up or send me a link or something or.
No. I will. You're on.
I'm on. That's great to tell my listeners. That's great. I think you've had a drone filming. Didn't they use a drone at times to do some film of your event?
I'm not aware that we had a drone at the plunge. We did have some ice. The firemen also train at Oakdale in the winter.
Oh.
You know, they work on their underwater, their dive skills, and their, you know, it's very complex. The communications and all of that, and we've had some drone footage. I'm blanking on his name. Lance Wheeler's brother,
Glenn.
Glenn Wheeler. Glenn Wheeler did a fantastic drone video of the firemen training at the lake.
I think I was there at the time. I remember him. I was there when it happened, when he was doing it. But that's exciting. So I just want to thank you, Peter and Pat, for coming on Rob Around the County today. And this show is heard several times during each month, and I do it once a month. And Pat, if you have a chance, I'm always looking to interview somebody in Hudson, you know, and you know people around. I've done Dick Tracy and many different people, but sometime there may be somebody that might be great for another interview, and if you could pass their name to me, that would be great, because I'll be looking for somebody for January. I have a month.
Let me think on that. There's a few oldie but goodies still around here they're much clearer on a lot of stuff than I am.
Well, you were good, Pat. You were good. You were right to the point and very understandable.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having us on. You know, the youth center / boys club. You know, very near and dear to Peter and I both. So we love talking about it.
And I'd love to meet you sometime, maybe at Cascade. I met Peter. Maybe, Pat, I can meet sometime for breakfast out there.
Okay. I'll be away January and February, but, once I get back.
Okay, then maybe in March.
Yep.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you, Peter, again, and thank you, Pat Malloy.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Rob.
All right, bye now.
Bye.